Rewind is an award-winning insider's look at Wisconsin politics and public policy. Brought to you by Wisconsin Eye and wispolitics.com. To become a program sponsor, please send an email to rewind@wiseye.org.
I believe united we stand, and we have common ground to find, and we're going to find it. We're not even going to use it.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind for the week that Joint Finance gave the Assembly and the Senate a budget. But first, Wisseye was there. The 19th Amendment ceremony in the Capitol honoring the amendment that gave women the right to vote. Wisconsin was the first state to ratify. And it's never too early with the Chief Justice to talk about the Capitol Christmas tree ornament and debate over a bill that would require a referendum to levy wheel taxes. Excuse me. Wisseye was there.
100 years since the women of America looked to Wisconsin, knowing that we were first to ratify the 19th Amendment. Forward. And that is exactly where the women of today, standing on the shoulders of the women of yesterday, will most certainly take our state and our country.
The Wisconsin Capitol ornament for 2019 has Forward as its inspiration. Forward is an allegory to devotion and progress. Wisconsin women repeatedly have shown devotion to suffrage.
I'm here today to speak against Assembly Bill 283. The intent of this overall package is, as Representative Sanfilippo mentioned, was safety and efficiency of our roads, and I just fail to see how this specific proposal has anything to do with safety and efficiency of our roads.
This bill is about saying to the property taxpayers and voters who must approve a consolidation, or the school board that must approve consolidation, if you do this, you can tell your property taxpayers that it's not going to result in an increase in their tax rate, at least during the 5 years in which this aid is being provided.
Obviously, the biggest news, JR, is Joint Finance approving a budget. Let's walk out with some numbers. All funds spending would increase 5.4% to $81.5 billion over 2 years. GPR spending would increase 5.9%, an increase of $2 billion over 2 years. Then the Republicans yesterday added the tax cut. If you're scoring $378 million income tax cut, averaging $75 per taxpayer the first year, up to $136 the second year, using sales tax paid by online retailers to cut income taxes. There's a second bracket. Let's not get into that. And then $58 million more for lottery credit. Democrats said no, because our the governor's income tax would have targeted more to the middle class. Republicans, you did not expand Medicaid, and you didn't spend enough, that amount recommended by Governor Evers on K-12. Your thoughts?
Oh, interesting. The tax cut, one thing I'm trying to figure out is there are actually two tax cuts.
Yes, there are.
One's in the budget, one's not, a separate bill. So you have the one they put in, the budget, but the separate one is interesting because there's a U.S. Supreme Court decision that basically opened the door to collecting sales tax from online sales from retailers who don't have a physical presence in your state. So that's supposed to collect around $61 million in the first year it's in place.
Yeah.
There's already law in place to reduce income taxes, but the brackets, we have four brackets, reduce it proportionally. They redirected the money to the lower brackets. Now there's this trailer bill that would expand the definition of online sales. So, like, obviously, if you go to Amazon right now and buy something, you pay the sales tax. Amazon Marketplace, however, a third-party seller, or eBay, it's not quite clear about that right now. So what they're doing is they're saying, okay, we're going to expand the definition to make sure. If I sell you an old golf club on eBay, I'm not going to get hit.
Right.
But if you hit a certain mark for a number of sales or revenue, you're going to start to remit the sales tax on that.
Yes.
That's another decrease, but it's not in the budget. I'm kind of curious why. I haven't figured that out yet. But with that trailer bill, I talked to Peter Barker yesterday, the revenue secretary. He said they've had constructive conversations always about it. So I think the Evers administration is on board with that second cut because the money's coming in as it is. I mean, it's going to happen no matter what. So what do you do with it? Well, it's already directed towards sales tax or income tax cuts. But the interesting thing is, The original income tax cut was only drafted as a one-year cut.
Yes.
This bill would make it permanent, all that kind of good stuff. So it's kind of interesting.
Well, okay. So yesterday, by the way, and you and I are grateful, they finished by the light of day.
That's right.
Instead of 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. Well, but here's my question. So you had joint finance wrap up. You had both sides have press conferences. Why have we heard nothing from Governor Evers on the joint finance action?
I think they're waiting to see how this bill is drafted. And that's going to give clues for him of what he can do with the line item veto. Remember, he's got a couple options. I mean, one option is that he does nothing. It becomes law without signature. Another option is he signs the entire thing, which I don't think is going to happen. Another option is veto the entire thing, which, but most likely, I mean, line item veto, he can rewrite big checks of this budget depending how it's drafted. And until you see the language, you don't know what he can do with it. I think they're kind of waiting to see what's in there that they can work with.
Okay, but do you think joint finance took some steps, including the capital budget, which we'll talk in about a minute, to come closer to the governor's positions on some of these major issues?
I think they're trying to portray this as a compromise budget. Robin Voss Thursday said that, look, there's something for everybody in this budget. If you're a conservative, there are tax cuts. If you're a liberal, there's more money for schools. This is a great thing, you know. I'm not sure that Governor Evers is on the same place as Robin Voss when it comes to this budget. But again, until we see what it looks like, I don't know what he can do with it. However, they want to send a message, Republicans at Evers, of we did $1 billion for UW in the capital budget, $500 million for schools, K-12. We expanded this program. We fixed the roads like you wanted, although they funded it differently.
Differently.
So how do you turn this down, Governor? What's the better deal you're going to get? And that's what I don't know.
Okay.
Nobody knows for sure. We haven't been through a full veto before of what would happen then and what kind of deal could you get.
Right. And that's where we will go next once we hear from Speaker Voss. But let's just update on the process here. Senate Republicans are going to caucus Tuesday to get information on the final version of the budget.
Well, here's the deal. They've got 19 members, Republican members. They need 17 to pass a budget without Democratic support. That's not going to happen. Dems are not going to vote for this budget. So you need to rely on that Republican caucus. We have Dave Craig saying he's gravely concerned about the excessive spending in the budget. We have Steve Noss saying between the capital budget, the structural deficit, and the transportation package, day by day, it's harder to vote for this thing. And Chris Capigna is being really quiet. So people I talk to assume that Craig's a no. Noss looks kind of iffy at best, and Capigna, what's he want? So Fitz has got to figure out, where are the votes?
Okay.
He doesn't have them. What's he need to get those guys to get them on board?
Okay, and the Assembly's going to vote on Tuesday, June 25th.
Yep.
And the Senate could act as early as the next day?
Fitz said the next day, possibly, but more likely that Thursday the 26th, they'll be on the floor.
This is about people, not programs. And I just do a tick list of the people that we felt we should make an investment in and increase salaries and spending. The educators. We invested in education, one of the highest investments ever. We invested in nursing homes. We invested in vets. We invested in personal care workers. We invested in prison guards. We invested in job creators. We invested in DAs. We invested in assistant DAs. We invested in public defenders. We invested in the taxpayer.
This budget does absolutely nothing for those people living in those zip codes. We took out $40 million to replace lead laterals that would protect kids from getting cognitive disabilities if they're lead poisoned. And either way it goes, the state is going to have to pay, whether it's for their disability or for the lead remediation. We're still going to have to pay. We do it all the time. I don't think I'll ever understand the way that this body works. And a part of me feels fortunate not to, because then that means that I won't lose touch with the things that are important. And that's making sure that everyone that we represent, including the least of these, have every opportunity, the same as I did, to make it here.
Vetoing this budget means cutting funding to nearly 100 free and charitable clinics around the state. Vetoing this budget means cutting hospitals by $150 million. Vetoing this budget means cutting $540 million from our K-12 education system. Vetoing this budget means cutting the largest back-to-back increase in local road aids since 1998.
We strongly believe what the governor has proposed gets us back to fair after the last 8 years of things not being very fair, certainly out of balance here in the state.
Okay, now let's turn to Speaker Voss, and I want to use quotes from what he said at the Wisconsin Health News Forum event and his press conference yesterday. So let's open this discussion by hearing from Speaker Voss on Tuesday, Thursday on the veto question.
If for some reason Governor Evers chooses to veto the entire budget, which I think would be a huge mistake, we'll come back sometime in mid to late October and we'll take up a veto override, and we'll see if that's where the Democrats want to stand, where we'll be at the same budget as last year, which I think would be a huge loss for our state.
I am not accepting the fact that Governor Evers is going to veto the budget. I think that it's never been done in our state's history. So I think it's very unlikely when we have a budget that does focus on the four most important pillars, right? What did Governor Evers say? Fix the damn roads. We're doing that. What did he say? Make sure we have a budget that can help children. We're doing a kid-friendly plus budget. He said make sure that we have the ability to take care of the most vulnerable. We're doing that without expanding welfare. And we have enough resources left over that we prioritized a very large tax cut that's going to help every single family that pays taxes in the state. So I don't accept the fact that Governor Evers, when he looks at the totality of the document, is going to say, I'm going to veto the entire thing because I didn't get my way on one, two, or three different things.
So on Tuesday, Speaker Voss said we could come back in mid or late October. And then on Friday, you and I were listening closely. Would he again say come back in mid or late October? Here's my question. When he floated the not come back until October, had he not conferred with his new best friend, Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald?
Good question. I get the impression that Robin's trying to send like a message of like how great this budget is, because they want to portray this budget as a true compromise and try and put Evers in a difficult position of, if he were to veto it, he would get rid of all these good things. Like John Nygren, the co-chair of finance, the assembly co-chair, his last speech to wrap up the vote was all these things in the budget he said that Evers would do away with.
Right.
He vetoed it. Yeah. That's kind of part of the equation for the governor making that final decision.
Right. But let's talk about the pinch that October would bring. If we don't get a budget until October, the governor is a former superintendent of public instruction. Mm-hmm. He really wants school districts, our 424 school districts, to know how much state aid they're going to get. That's important. And when you get to October, local governments are beginning to frame up their 2020 budgets.
Oh, they're more than beginning. They're like in the final stages of it. They don't know the numbers. They're in a difficult spot to figure out their levies for the next year.
Right. So who's got more leverage in that scenario?
Good question, because we've never been through it before. So, I mean, we started doing executive budgets in 1931. And by that, before 1931, it was every agency had its own budget bill, essentially.
Yeah.
Since 31, there's never been a full veto of a budget, so I don't know how it'd play out.
Yeah, we're in uncharted waters. Okay, let's talk about the $1.9 billion approved for capital or building projects. Now, the governor recommended $2.5, and the first brush, the Finance Committee cut that way back, which, remember, Ray Cross said, I've got shins. Kicked in the shins. Well, now, the Joint Finance Committee approved $1.9 of which about $1 billion will go to UW system buildings, including UW-Milwaukee Chemistry Building, $130 million, UW-Madison Vet School, $128 million, UW-Eau Claire Health Science Building, $109 million, Medical College of Wisconsin Cancer Research, $100 million. Biggest winner when Joint Finance came back to the capital budget, UW system?
Oh, absolutely. We're going to talk about that in a little bit, but let's talk about what's not in there.
Okay, so let's, left the $98 million for the
State Office Building,
$70 million for the Alliance Center here in Madison, excuse me.
So with that, so Evers wanted, so oftentimes capital budget, the state will invest in a non-state project. What they did, Republicans say, okay, we're not going to do that, like earmark this project. We're going to create a fund of $25 million, I think it is, and allow groups to apply for the money essentially going forward. So left that out. There's one, like, UW La Crosse had a building for $80 million, well, it didn't make the cut. State office building. Juvenile justice. A year ago, they approved a bill to close Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake, the troubled youth prison in northern Wisconsin, to go to a system where we had county-run systems for lower-level offenders and then type 1 facilities run by the state for more serious offenders. They put $80 million bucks in bonding in that bill. Fast forward a year later, Governor Evers asked for more money both for the county programs and for the state ones. Republicans said no.
Yep.
Question is why? And part of what I picked up is that, look, they're still trying to figure out what's going on with the state facilities, because the state wants to put one in Milwaukee and one in basically the Appleton area, Hortonia.
Out of Gamey.
Yeah. They've been getting pushback on both of those things right now.
Yeah.
So Republicans are like, hey, give us a plan, stick to it, tell us what's going on. The counties, we've seen some plans from them. They're moving forward. So they moved all the bonding from that bill a year ago into the counties. Here's a couple of things, though. What this tells you is that they rushed that bill a year ago. Even back then, they knew there wasn't enough money to cover everything because they had never taken time to figure out what's a facility actually cost to build.
Right.
The first proposal we got back from counties, like $30-some million. The whole budget, I think, for counties was like 40 of what they wanted to borrow a year ago. The danger of this, is, though, is that if we don't have a solution soon, it means Lincoln Hills may stay open longer.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to close that place. They've got all kinds of problems up there. The kids who are housed there are away from their families. Studies show if you're a youth offender, if you're closer to a support network, you're more likely to succeed when you get out.
Right.
We're not getting that stuff done by keeping Lincoln Hills open. So what do? This puts the pressure on this bill that's working this legislature now to actually get a solution on youth juvenile justice and get something done.
Right. Okay. I want to come back to juvenile justice and do a little deeper dive on that, just with some other stuff. But first, let's note that in the wake of the capital budget being approved, Mr. Cross, the UW system, said it will help modernize laboratories and classrooms. But as you said, Senator Noss said excessive spending and bonding is now the rage as Republicans try to buy Governor Evers' support for our version of the budget. And now it's time to hear, Democratic Representative Chris Taylor saying, hey, we are so glad you Republicans are closer to the governor's original proposal. And Republican Rep. Mark Bourne talks about something that we haven't talked about. The Republicans added $5 million to begin looking for a new Green Bay prison. So let's hear from Representatives Taylor and Bourne.
The governor proposed about a $2.5 billion plan. Your plan is about, I think, $1.8 billion. I'm grateful, very grateful, that this governor is pushing you all. We've never seen these kinds of numbers from you all when you all have total control of things. And so this governor is pushing you. You're following his lead. And I'm really glad to see it.
Something that we added to this that the governor didn't have in his budget, and that was the start of the process towards a new maximum security prison. Focus should be investing in state facilities. They are our responsibility, whether they be on a UW campus or in an agency. And this budget certainly makes major investments in those areas.
Let's take a little deeper dive into the issue of after you close Lincoln Hills and the juvenile prisons, what's going to happen? Now, this week, as you just said, the picture became very, very muddied. But two counties now, La Crosse and Fond du Lac, have withdrawn from plans to participate in county regional juvenile prisons, largely funded by the state. The Fond du Lac County exec said, I'm seeing numbers like costing these juveniles, housing them, could be $1,000 a day. So the takeaway, JR, is we really don't know what's going to happen. Even though at one point there was a reference, I think, by Representative Bourne, who we just heard from, saying we can come around in September and resolve these funding issues. So let's do a little bit more with this issue. We really don't know when Lincoln Hills is going to close, when the two state facilities in Milwaukee and Outagamie and the future of potentially three county-run juvenile prisons, right?
Look, the counties are worried because they're not sure what's going to be there.
Yeah,
Again,
the cost.
The feeling that this bill was rushed a year ago. Basically, let's be honest, the bill was done to cover Scott Walker's butt. The Lincoln Hills issue erupted while he was governor. He was facing a tough reelection bid. They wanted to do something to show they were worried about, you know, paying attention to the issue. They got this bill done, but there were some things that weren't done, maybe fully investigated before they did it, right? That's the bottom line. Counties are worried that when push comes to shove, they're not going to get full funding for this.
They're going to get stuck. Let's just be blunt.
Absolutely. That's a great way to put it. So now what? That's, again, this bill is kind of work its way through. It's a separate bill that would delay the closing of Lincoln Hills, do some other things. That's really a lot of pressure. That bill done right, get the funding there to move this stuff forward. And let's also be honest, the Republicans who feel like the Evers administration is not moving as quickly as it could about this issue to get, like, these sites. Okay, you pick Milwaukee and Hortonia, stick to them. You know, get things going. Get us, like, plans. Let's go. And there are Evers folks saying, look, these guys followed this thing up a year ago. We're cleaning up the mess right now. So there's a divide on that issue, too.
Okay. Now let's talk about the governor's announcement yesterday that he's going to reinvent the pardon process. Mm-hmm. And he's created an 8-member pardon advisory board, and we're showing those members, a former judge, former assistant attorney general, anyway, and a former Madison police chief. So this is important because Governor Walker issued no pardons, pretty much didn't even pay any attention. Zero pardons over 8 years. It's a pretty amazing number. Now, but let's talk about the criteria. To apply for a pardon under the Evers administration, you had to be convicted of a felony. For the last 5 years, you had to have stayed out of trouble. Mm-hmm. And no one convicted of a sex offense is going to be eligible
who's
for
still
a pardon.
Who's still in the registry, yeah.
Who's still in the registry. Okay. Big deal?
Yeah. I mean, this is part of what Evers had talked about before. We knew he was going to do it. He's actually just following through and setting a process in place. There's now an application process, a website that you can go and apply to have anything taken care of. He noted that you're not going to have anything expunged if you receive a pardon. It just restores your rights, those kinds of things. But this is, Evers said he believes in redemption, essentially. This is a path toward that.
And I think there are thousands of prisoners who are still inmates who are eligible, who have served their time. And that's a different issue. Let's deal with the parole board on that. That's a different subject. My apologies. Okay, next subject. Supreme Court order said Dane County judge, don't hold this trial over lame duck changes. We're going to, in effect, is it fair to say, reinstate the lame duck changes that the Republican ledge and Governor Walker passed in December?
Cumulatively, between the two cases for the Supreme Court, almost everything's back in place. So let's break them down. Earlier, the Supreme Court lifted an injunction over was basically a question of could the legislature meet an extraordinary session and pass these laws. Dane County judge said no. Supreme Court overturned that ruling and said those laws are all back in place. This case deals more of a separation of powers issue, whether AG Josh Call has to seek the approval of the legislature to settle lawsuits, essentially. Also dealt with things called guidance documents. So when there's a law passed, agencies have to pass rules to implement it because the law doesn't cover every scenario. There are also these documents that provide guidance to those who are dealing with these laws to figure out, okay, beyond the rules, what else, you know, there are some nuances you got to figure out. Right. So there are various documents they've gotten. Those documents were supposed to be reviewed by July 1, otherwise they all go away. Well, the court said we're not going to lift the stay in that law because there's not enough time for agencies to fix that because they've been operating for months on the assumption that there'd be no requirement to review them, so they need time.
Yeah.
So that's still on hold. Everything else is back in place, essentially. What they did here was they put that back in place, and they said, don't worry about doing this trial in the guidance documents because we're doing everything else over here.
Foreshadow how the court is eventually going to rule on the challenges to the lame duck?
Look, you know, except for a few very, very, very opposite Democrats, everybody I talked to says the court's going to end up where we know they're going to end up. There's a conservative majority right now, 4-3. They're going to side with Republicans. They've sent a number of signals in these cases about where they're going to end up. I mean, oral arguments, it was pretty clear about the case, the can you meet extraordinary session case.
Yeah.
Very clear that there were at least three conservative justices who had serious doubts about the Democratic argument. The fourth one wasn't very vocal during the hearing, but we kind of know where they're going to go. This case, remember, the court took the usual step of grabbing the appeal without being asked.
Yes.
So, yeah, we know where they're going to end up.
Right. Okay. Stock picks, rising.
So, UAB system. So, I remember 2 weeks ago.
Why is Mr. Cross smiling?
Because he was kicked in the shins 2 weeks ago. His shins feel a whole lot better right now because they just produced $1 billion capital budget for him, basically for the system, right? Here's the thing, though. The things to watch. So, they got to be happy. Evers was at $1.1 billion in his proposal. They got just more than $1 billion from the legislature. So, they're in good shape. The question is, well, what's next? Because remember, you know, the Nass-Craig capping a thing? What do they need to get one of those guys on board? Is it something in the capital budget? Got to watch about that. Also, that threat of the overall veto is still there. If Evers were to veto the entire budget, this stuff goes away, goes back to negotiations. Then what? Can they get a better deal? So, look, the overall picture, though, is they got a very big boost.
Yeah, they did.
I was told by people that the university system did a good job of getting lawmakers into the classroom saying, okay, look at what we've got going on here. And Republicans will tell you quietly that, look, you know, for 8 years, they didn't invest in these maintenance of these buildings or projects, and they kind of needed to do something because Scott Walker wanted to keep bonding low. While they're borrowing for roads, they want to borrow for other stuff. So they kept the building projects low, and they needed to do something. They realized
I checked with the Physical Bureau. You mentioned bonding. Bonding in this new budget recommended by JFC, $1.95 billion. But that's not on point. Okay, mixed.
So will he or won't he? This question of the veto of for governors. Will he veto the entire thing? And in asking people about that, we kind of touched on a little bit earlier, but in asking folks about this question, I've got two views. One is Evers ran on three things. You know what they are?
He won?
No, three things he ran on.
He ran on. Oh, sure. Healthcare, transportation, and K-12 spending.
Absolutely. What did he get? Did they fix the damn roads? Well, the GOP package gets the same ballpark.
Basically gets the same amount spent for highways.
But differently, right? They rely on fees, not on the gas tax. Okay, so he kind of got there. Did he get something on K-12? Well, he wanted $1.4 billion. They gave $500 million, so got a boost. Did they have Medicaid expansion? No.
No.
And he never will. I mean, there's no way Ron Voss is going to approve Medicaid expansion.
However, as Nygren pointed out, they did deal with personal care. Some of the individual programs that Evers wanted more money spent on, they funded.
So did he get enough from those nursing three homes. Things to sign the budget? You could argue, some people say, that he didn't. And he could say, I'm going to veto this entire thing because those are my bottom lines and the public is with me on these issues. The other train of thought is there's no way he'd veto the budget because then what? How does he get a better deal? Governor Evers is former state superintendent of education. How can he tell schools, I'm going to veto this budget with a $500 increase, and then you have to wait till the end of October for Voss to even come back and maybe do something? Then what happens? I mean, that's a tough situation to be in. And John Nygren, the co-chair of finance, last vote. Money for schools, money
hospitals,
for healthcare, all the things that they did.
Prison guards, DAs, public defenders.
So then what? Well, here's the thing. We have to see what the drafting, what the language looks like in the bill. Why I think it's so important is that partial veto authority, you can work with the language and rework things. So if he can find ways to maneuver through that bill and make it more palatable, it's more likely he'd sign it. But if he doesn't, then what? And I really don't know. I mean, Robin Voss is convinced that if Evers vetoes a bill, he owns all the problems. He's to blame for the education, not getting more money this fall.
And earlier this year, he said if he vetoes the bill, he's going to get a second one that spends much less. Now, you're still waiting. Is it still an option to put policy in one bill and the spending, the numbers, the
possibly
appropriations in the other?
So I haven't gotten a final word about that yet through the process. But
okay,
the flip side is we both sat through a budget in 2007 that dragged on late October.
Yeah.
When that happened, everybody stunk, right? I don't know anybody was the... So if Evers vetoes it, and we're here in October still talking about this, is there really any winner or loser out of that, or are they all losers?
A pox on both your houses.
I don't know. I mean, we've never seen it before, so I don't know.
Okay, falling.
So the 999 motion. So this is
the last motion adopted by Joint Finance.
And we've seen all kinds of tricks by this thing over the years. I mean, there was a...
And they come out at 2 o'clock in the morning and 4 o'clock in the morning. And
bringing back the bail bond industry. Sheila legislature from the open records law. This 999 motion was one paragraph, just drafting directions. That was it.
Yeah.
For all the, like, talk about, like, oh, they're going to talk about wedding barns, or I never thought that was even the case, because the more policy you put into a budget, the more fodder you have Evers that line item veto authority. Plus, two, if they're Republican projects, why would he sign them?
And it was a 999 motion that took on the open records. You remember that controversy?
Yeah.
Boy, that boiled.
Here's the thing, though. There was policy put in this budget. And look at the transportation package this week. There are two very big policies put in there. One's about designing highways. One's about aggregate, basically it was going to go as a road construction, and the regulations of quarries. If you read that motion, there are pages upon pages of language. Now, I haven't seen the actual bill language, and that's what's important.
Yeah.
So the thought that I heard was that either they are working on a deal with the Evers administration that they will sign those things without any partial vetoes, or the industry is, or they're going to have to come out, because how do you have a bill, how do you put that ripe language in there without an assurance from the governor about what he's going to do on it? Right. That's the thing to watch. There's a lot of policy there in those two things, but just not the 999.
Yeah, we shift kind of the theater here from joint finance to the full ledge and all this back and forth.
Now, the full ledge, floor amendments.
Yes.
What does those three guys in the Senate, Republicans, what do they need to vote for the budget? You know, and what's it going to take? Also,
tapping at Craig and Nuss. Go ahead.
We always get a technical amendment often.
Yes.
Right off the bat.
I understand.
The definition of technical is quite interesting some years with the legislature.
We're a long way from getting this budget signed, and we have no idea when that'll be. Okay, quickly on next week. The assembly's in for
Tuesday and Thursday.
Tuesday and Thursday. That's not on the budget. The Senate Republicans are going to meet on the budget. We have two assembly task forces on suicide prevention and adoption meeting. Wisconsin and I will be covering those. And you and I will be gone.
Yes.
So Sean Johnson of Public Radio and Patrick Marley of Journal Sentinel are going to be piloting and co-piloting the show. And we're going to be off. I'm going to be spoiling 9 grandchildren. And you're going to be, it's going to be, you're going to have fun. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for June 14th.